Chapter 5 Language. Language, survival skill. An American woman alone on a boat in a small harbor in Mexico. That was me. I needed to know how to ask for help, so I learned Spanish quicker than I ever did in 3 years at school. In our family, in New England, white settler culture, I know, experienced language as a form of dominance. I still shudder at Wynne's tone of voice, as if he is my father yelling, chasing me up the stairs with a belt. Just once. It only took just once to lay an imprint that is still hard to shake. I was maybe 6 at the time, leaning over the banister in our home, wanting to hear what they were saying and doing below. My desire to be close to them at night, and that was not okay. It's unlikely Wynne's tone of voice when upset is going to shift, much less that of most men in the world. So I guess I still have some work to do. Whether it was fathers with daughters, men over women, adults over youth, whites over so-called coloreds, settlers over neighbors, employees over help. I identified our language early on, even in seemingly genteel Connecticut, as not such a good thing. And that included extensive gossip. I hit a place where it seemed to me that words had little meaning. I'll be home at 8. That's what my parents said. And that statement led to an early breach of trust when they showed up at 9:30 and didn't even check in. Of course, they didn't want to wake me. And yet I had never slept, thinking that entire hour and a half that they must have been wrecked in a car or even be dead. From then on, I started double-checking what people said, especially when they used the words, I love you. By my early 20s, numerous so-called love affairs had shown me clearly that it meant very different things to different people. For me, it meant something like, I trust you, I see you, I support you, I'm willing to share anything and everything with you. For my boyfriend, it meant, I tell you I love you, yep, because I like you and share a lot, but only what I want to. I keep my affairs with others to myself in order not to hurt you. Now that was an eye-opener, as well as a heartbreaker. I think I was 30 when I decided not to talk unless it was essential. I would respond if I was asked something, but I wouldn't initiate. At the time, I had no psychological study, spiritual teacher, or even a so-called practice. It just came to me one day, one evening actually. I remember when staring into the fire. I felt despair, powerless, you might say, to be around too much conversation that seemed fruitless, untrue at best, and many times destructive. Who was I to judge? Was I any better? Just because I had this strange idea that language was for another purpose? Language, I felt, it was so incredibly powerful. We as humans, after all, could change the world with it, make up stories, rewrite history, create images, thoughts, ideas, say so much more than a signature whistle, even of a dolphin. There were a number of people, scientists, actually, in the 80s, working on teaching dolphins English. To be honest, after swimming with them quite a bit, I just didn't get why they would want to learn English, or even why we would want them to. When I first swam, as told earlier with Joe and Rosie, so much that I had been longing for was communicated in minutes. When I have truly needed dolphins, two or three times at sea in my life, once literally for physical survival, another time for what one might call emotional or spiritual survival, they showed up. Now, what is that? I've often wondered about what led me to trying this essential talk-only experiment for a year. What might happen if we make more room for God's voice? What if we spoke only when there was need? How many other ways of communication might deepen or emerge? Not only with humans, but with all of life, all of nature. How might a simple change of our language affect our culture and our world? Now, you may think I'm crazy to imagine, much less suggest such, but I can say this. People who come and sit for hours, for days in council, are often longing for what I'm proposing. They relax when they are here, free from fear of being interrupted. They don't have to plan ahead what they are going to say, and they can truly listen to others, to the spaces in between, to the nature they, we are but a part of. They can begin to trust what comes through when it's their turn, when we don't have to use up most of our energy to simply find a place where to jump into the fray. They, we heal wounds of not being heard as others give fuller attention. They and we heal wounds of domination, I dare say, by those in charge, by those louder, by those quicker, by those with status or so-called power. When we discover a power of truth, authenticity, and heart speech. That small taste in a slowed-down circle way, I'll dare to call system change. What is it when a dolphin appears, just when I think or even call out in my heart mind? What is it when a rain song I was taught by an elder only is remembered when the prayer for rain is deep and real, and then the song comes? What is it when I wake late in the night and know to call my partner who has suddenly been fired 5,000 miles away? What is it when John calls me on my birthday, years after our separation, to leave the most loving message ever, only the next morning to wake and die of a massive heart attack? What is essential for our soul's journey to be complete? Why do cultures tend to die when they lose their language or are denied it? And what language is universal, available to all humans, all species? Is this the language we need more of? Or is it just me that feels this way? Every moment, every person seems to benefit from, if not need, music, quiet, touch. Each morning I wake here in Greece, in Sifnos, in the small bay in the village of Vati, to the very loud sound of the Greek fisherman's voice who lives below. He usually begins the rant or raves, some might call them, with only a few breaks for cooking or siestas. They go on into the night. Too much coffee, perhaps, and it seems it's, well, it's a lot more than that. What an opportunity, perhaps, to heal my visceral reaction to the loud male voice that most often registers as angry, domineering if not dominating. This guy is particularly extreme. I can't help but think he longs to be heard. Or am I to accept it as strictly a cultural thing, a way to simply be experienced and appreciated? I find myself longing for the feminine, the tones of the Lakota I know, the Hopi I know, the Mohawk I know. For it's not only women I long for, as their response can be as shrill, as deafening, and even as domineering at times. A single sparrow's voice catches my attention, and I find some relief. It's going to be another long day here in paradise. My language of choice a lot of the time is silence, story, music, movement, laughter, and what I've come to name Jijinese. Now others may call it gibberish, yet it is what emerged as a gateway to initiate again after that year long. I actually stuttered for a time when it was my turn to speak, or I had to, or God forbid, I was asked to go first in a circle. Those circles were ones begun early on with Joan Halifax at Ojai, or founders of the Threshold Circle. They were often quite large and intimidating, filled with various people of different kinds of wealth and power, millionaires, indigenous elders, neuroscientists, revolutionaries, brilliant, whole, fragmented and lost souls, trying to find their way home. Language of the heart was one doorway. I only slipped through very awkwardly. It seemed impossible in this newly claimed culture of mine to say who I was, why I was there, or what truly mattered. The Jijinese always helped me get started. Years later, I still feel in good company when with others who have heard or spoken enough English, or when simple sounds and expressions on their faces or bodies can actually say what wants to be said well, if not even better. Often in counsel practice, I initiate an exercise called Truth Bites. Each person can ask their partner across from them any question at all. The other has 3 to 5 words only to answer, and yes or no are not acceptable. Without stealing or copying that question posed to them, they, after answering, quickly as possible, ask another one back. And then it goes on, for at least 20 minutes, if not all day. Any question is possible, opening a field of freedom, intimacy, trust. A response to a question can always be, none of your business. 4 words. No judgments. Blurts prevail. Participants return with almost disbelief. How much can be communicated and understood when we're listening to each other in 3 to 5 words? How questions and such attention are a true gateway to communion. How refreshing, if not profound, the experience is. Having now offered this exercise perhaps hundreds of times, I can say the impact is revealing and healing. After all, it grew out of a time of disconnection between Wynne and I. I felt somehow desperate riding for miles and hours in our truck Rooster on a long road trip. It felt the bottom had fallen out of our conversation, if not our relationship entirely. I pulled over onto a dirt road. I was praying for a way through. And then this idea appeared. It clearly was a mixture and influence of games and practices, an emergence of something simple to help in just that moment. And now, Truth Bites has served so many. Awakening intimacy with self and others and allowing for a group soul to have its moment. Wynn and I, that first time, walked for maybe 45 minutes with our questions and our answers. And in the end, we remembered why we were walking and living together through all the bumps and disappointments that had seemed insurmountable only an hour before. Many communities know that too much focus and attention on the personal leads to an unending process. At the same time, if process is totally bypassed, what some call spiritual bypass can occur. A grand world vision, in my experience, loses soul and can miss out on becoming the sum of its parts. It's the nature of the many sticks held or holding together. That's when they get stronger. Without some individual story, song lines woven in the web, I too often taste only more dogma. I listened for sure to the philosophy, the vision, the Geist, and I returned most often to the feelings, to the don't know mind. It's then that the moments and the movement of the soul has a chance to appear. What becomes of greater interest to me is within such moments, within the movement, there is little distinction between my soul and another's. Even more of interest is when there is what some have come to call a sense of or experience of the we, the group soul. Best I know of such is experienced when moving within a pod of dolphins, turning when they turn, meeting at the place I have dreamed them to be, a moment perhaps of grace. Krishnamurti used to say, clean the closet, sweep the floor, and leave the window open. I sweep a lot of floors, and I work to clear many closets of a lot of stuff. Nonetheless, it is these moments that come and go that I seek to make more room for. They are why I stay. They are why I continue, even on this day. Today, emails informed me that our local Paiute Numu tribe is in a lot of disarray, if not something even worse. I hesitate again here to use the power of words and spread an image or story that I have little knowledge of. I just know things have broken down. The tribal government has seemingly disbanded, and outside local authorities have come onto the scene. Why? What for? No details, only a sense of pain passed on over and over again between and within our nations. At the same time, Trump is handling so-called international relations, not only those on Turtle Island, but others around the world that continue to erode any sense of trust and communication. Accusations of terror and weapons, nuclear threats abound everywhere, and wars are built on them. I now choose to read more history than ever before, attempting to get to the truth of what happened here on Turtle Island before my ancestors came, as well as afterwards. I, along with many others, seek to bear witness to such, to name the wounds, the injustice. So just perhaps as can be the case in our human body, we might heal. We might learn from it. We might be able to move on. And yet I share the recurring question for many, who to believe? I do know, living in the spirit of counsel, that there are so many sides to every story. How far back do we go to find peaceful cultures? Was there a time when colonizations of peoples and places did not exist? Who was in charge then, if any? And what needs to be reclaimed, remembered? Today we are in, it said, the sixth extinction. The first major extinction of magnificent creatures began when Homo sapiens arrived. Disruption of ecosystems began long before the agricultural revolution, and genocide long before the industrial or Christian crusaders. As peace was and is within tribes on Turtle Island, I tend to also believe the evidence that it was also in old Europe, in Crete, and in the hearts and homes of the tribes there. So what ancestors do I call on? Do I seek to understand, forgive, or be informed by? This remains a daily inquiry that comes in the form of a prayer. And I ask again, what is sacred? 40 plus years ago, 42 to be exact, I walked on this island of Sifnos to all of the churches that I could reach. I figured any place held to be sacred by some was worth a visit. I found them, as I do now, unlocked mostly, available, a place to sit in silence, to sing, to light a candle, find a prayer, make an offering. I say most unlocked, as I have heard today people have stolen some of the icons, pictures of saints that are stacked against most every wall, and some now are being locked. Hard to imagine, and yet not really. I remember when walking the Camino Trail in Spain, every church was locked. Trying to look for the gift in this, perhaps it nudges more people to find the sacred outside in nature, and in themselves, and in others. Yesterday we drove, which many years ago was not possible even, to the farthest northern tip of the island. So beautiful, so powerful still. We walked the last quarter mile up a hill to the church, one of now 350 on this island, only 15 miles long. That alone is quite a statement. The white chapels, often with blue trims, highlighting features, come in all sizes. Many continually used by locals and globals alike for large weddings. Others smaller, simpler, just the size for a few pilgrims to come and go. Most of them, one cannot help but notice, are on the edge, edges built into cliffs, the end of promontories, bordering the sea, and then just a few, smack in the center of the village. It is impossible to not notice them, and that's the point, I guess. And even if not called inside, their presence also invokes the sacred. What a mystery lies within them, within religion. So many people giving so much attention and devotion to a god, a saint, a story. I can't help but wonder if the ocean would have become our waste dump for plastic and so much more if more peoples held all of life to be sacred, if they were as curious about the mystery of the ocean. Water is life. now a truth slogan going worldwide as Lakota, along with others, take a stand at Standing Rock. Others come in solidarity. The awareness awakens, perhaps just a little bit more, perhaps. At sunset, I made my offering, opened for a prayer to come through as it did, as it always does. Such moments are home. Once out of the chapel, I walked further to the edge of the land facing the sea, feeling as free as I ever can be on land. Song came easily, as it often does in such places. There were good reasons to invite attention to the sacred here. How much the buildings and all the paintings and icons, beautiful and holy as they may be, can perhaps take us away or more towards the sacredness of all life. That remains perhaps a bigger mystery for me. Certainly the worship here in these places is far more than I can fathom, understand, or even replicate in my life. As I leave the hilltop, I notice two other pilgrims have come and gone, and just as the sun is setting, we meet below at the crossroads. A small taverna looks to be open next to us. Its location, perched so high above the tiny village, is a lure to eat and drink. The last light of the day, however, is no longer visible from the deck. All four of us, in a quick meeting, decide to follow the sun and see where our need to honor its daily descent will lead us. Down a few steps, around a few houses, we find ourselves perfectly lined up to spend those last moments there, on a wall, quietly giving our full attention. Two German teachers in their 60s, now retired. They were in need of a ride back to where they were staying in Apollonia, the center of the island. Even if not exactly in the center, it is the hub from which most everything passes: tourists, food, transport. And we were happy to offer the lift, and especially to know that they were walking everywhere they could and visiting as many of the chapels that they could reach with their 2 feet. This entailed climbing, of course, to most of the highest hills on the mountains around. Within 2 hours of our time together, we covered or at least touched key topics of any council. What is happening in the politics of our countries? What is happening in the refugee crisis, the Holocaust, the genocide of indigenous? And what is the power of art, prayer, and action? Will, he even knew about the sterilization of slaves in South Carolina and had concentrated his years painting murals with social justice messages. And now retired, so to speak, mid-60s, he confessed he was without hope. The youth he worked with rarely cared for anything more than their own comfort, access through money. The conversation continued into the dark of the night, as well as into the darkness of our times. As is my way, I felt our meeting was no mistake. We were not there to convince him or any to have hope. Giving up hope and home is often part of the spiritual journey. It is then I get to see if I continue to care, to act, to engage, to bear witness, to restore, to water beauty and give our attention to the water, to the water planet, even in the darkest of times. To do this without knowing, without being able to see the outcome, without even feedback that it is of any value, appreciated, or the right thing even to do. I told Will that I shared his despair at times, working hard all of these years to make a change, only to feel now things are worse than ever and seem to be getting more extreme. And at the same time, Wynne and I shared our stories about the youngers that we know, who seem far more caring, awake, and engaged than even we were at their age. We spoke of the light, the sacred moments in our lifetime that kept us in our hearts, able to continue with or without hope, simply to care deeply, as we saw that the two of them did, and then let that guide our days. We parted company with a hug. I don't know how the ride with us may have served, really in any way, but I do know that energy was high and spirit was present when we said goodbye. I left happy, knowing they were walking these Greek islands now indefinitely. They had bought a one-way ticket, trusting that the pilgrimage would give their souls just what was needed, trusting that their care, their prayer, their joy with this place and with each other was yet again a small acupuncture point, a pathway to one more healthy cell in their bodies as well as in this earth body. As we left the sunset terrace, I took the remaining bread we had been gifted and paid it forward. I am not, I would say, religious, I guess. It's just I can't bear to leave food on a table or water glasses half filled. And feeding our ancestors, found in a variety of cultures, is a practice that I've always related to. Walking to the car, I broke the bread and scattered crumbs for the plants, the creatures, for all of life to be nourished. I guess it was and is often a way of simply breaking bread, the Holy Host, a form of communion. My Catholic roots are not so very far away, or perhaps it's the other way around. Some of what's Catholic is not so far away from what is Indigenous. My Indigenous roots, perhaps my ancestors' way of sharing whatever we have, of not wasting, of remembering. This is my body. This is my blood. Water is life. That affirmation or experience of the sacred can be daily said and lived. The church is always open. Sunday morning. This church, near where we are staying, is open, and I sit alone here, with the exception of over 20 pictures of Jesus and Mary and many saints all around me. Now remember, I am no saint for sure. Humbled yet again by the presence of devotion, study, discipline, art, care, beauty, reverence that's here. Wondering how this led to the papal bull, to the seeing and treating of indigenous people as heathens to be dominated, indoctrinated, enslaved, killed. Yes, this is somehow a more relevant story for me than ever the sacraments herein enacted. Today, I give thanks again that the young ones are speaking out. Today, on this very day, Tokata, a 15-year young woman from Standing Rock, welcomes the 15-year young Greta to her homeland. They will speak together about the care and attention our sacred earth needs. Communion. May their prayer be heard.